Our lives are in the hands of men. Whether we live to see another day or not depends on men. The day we take our last breath will be determined by men. The day we lose our virginity, our innocence, our dignity, our lives is determined by men. Living as a girl in South Africa is like living on borrowed time. It's like being constantly surrounded by predators. I feel afraid. To be honest, I feel like I have to make sure I don't anger men. I have to make sure to not press the wrong buttons. I have to make sure to say the right things, to do the right things just to stay alive. I am constantly living in fear. Walking down a road or a passage or a corridor with men or a man only, I sigh and tell myself, this may be the end. This may be my last day, my last moment on this earth. There is no place I feel safe at. I can't rely on the security guard guarding where I stay because he's a man. I can't rely on my family member, my uncle, my cousin, because he is a man. I can't rely on my boyfriend for safety and security because he is a man. And because my life as a woman has no value. Because I am nothing here in South Africa as a woman.
Hey guys, so that's a clip from the podcast called Season 2000 by Ndombi from South Africa. She is a 20-year-old podcaster and pharmacy student I met somewhere on the internet. I met her on a site called audrey.io, which is a site meant for podcasters to meet and collaborate. So I'm going through her episode list and I see this episode titled Life as a Woman in South Africa, and I'm like, interesting. I wonder if womanhood in SA is the same as womanhood in Kenya. So I go ahead and listen to this episode and it sounded so familiar. And it's basically episode 8 of this podcast. It's the life experiences of different women, some spoken in English and some spoken in the local languages, but it's basically the same experiences we face here. So I was like, I have to talk to this girl. Like, how did you make the same episode having never met? So in this episode, we talk about some of these issues and how we ended up making the same episode. Which just confirms what I said in episode 8. You are not alone and you did not imagine it. So here's Ndombi from season 2000. Hello there and welcome to the Cocoa Butter Junkie podcast. I'm Michelle and this is my podcast. This is a podcast on the everyday reflections and experiences of a Kenyan woman. It is my examination of life living through mental health issues, grief, growing up, aka kicking and screaming into adulthood, the experiences of being a woman in Kenya, making friends as an adult, struggles with faith, and a bunch of other topics. Thank you for listening.
Okay, so my name is Ndombi, full name Ndomzodwa, but everyone just calls me Ndombi. I am the host of the podcast called Season 2000. I started it this year, actually, round about in March, April there. I am 20 years old. I am from South Africa. I was born in Zimbabwe, but I'm living in South Africa as a South African citizen. I am also a pharmacy student. I'm in third year, so I'm in my pre-final year of my degree. And yeah, that's, I think that's me in a nutshell-ish, sort of.
Before we start, guys, recording this was a bit difficult, if I may call it that. Technology. I think both our connections were acting up, or maybe it was just mine. We kept going on and off, but we finally met the recording. So, guys, this was recorded over the internet. The sound quality may not be 100%. But as we like to say here in Kenya, listen to the words and not the voice. And also, if you have not listened to episode 8, you might want to go back and listen to that first for context.
What made you do the episode on... You called it Life as a Woman in South Africa. What made you do that episode?
I think that's a very good question. So recently, I think about 3 weeks ago, a first year student from the same university that I go to was actually murdered by her boyfriend, at the hands of her boyfriend. Apparently, wow. You know, before that event happened, she was trying to break up with him, but he wouldn't let up. And, you know, it was just a very terrifying event, knowing also that last year, around about the same time, another young lady who was 19 years old also got raped and killed by a guy at the police station. And here in South Africa, August is Women's Month. So it's like almost, it's almost as if more women get raped and killed and murdered in the month of August. So to me, it just became such a very big conversation on social media, such as Twitter and Instagram, where people were talking about how women just do not live the most comfortable life in South Africa, and that our lives are basically, you know, living in the hands of men, and we never know what can happen to us when we walk out. Are we going to get raped? Are we going to get killed? What is going to happen to us? So that really triggered me, and I wanted to just create a platform where females could realize that the fears that they have in when they're walking in the streets of South Africa are shared, and then also just to educate the male counterparts and tell them that, listen, this is actually how we feel. But obviously the podcast is more directed towards the younger generation, and I feel like they are the people who need to hear it the most, especially the younger males. They are the people that need to hear it the most, because they are the ones who are going to be the drivers of change, and not the older generation.
At this point, I was wondering if she made the episode differently from how I did mine. So I asked how she collected the stories. Turns out she did sort of the same thing that I did.
It was almost like an impromptu decision. So the night before I released that episode, I asked a few of my, because I was going to make it a conversation on my own, but I realized that my voice alone won't represent the entire, not even the entire, but like minority of the people that listen to my podcast. So I said to myself the night before, I sent a few of my friends on WhatsApp, like messages, and asking them just to give me a short recording of how it feels like to live as a woman in South Africa. And then eventually I decided, you know what, I should probably just put this on my status and allow anyone who would like to answer the leeway to do so. And then I got so many overwhelming responses. I think I got responses until I actually had to publish the episode, Nick, and I actually could not put some of them in the episode that I released because it was just way too late. And so most of them are not necessarily friends, but people I know, and then some of them are actually complete strangers.
Yeah. So how did it make you feel like listening to all those stories?
On the one side, it was good to know that I'm not alone, you know, in those feelings that I feel. Because with each and every voice note that came in or every recording that came in, I felt, okay, I can actually relate to a small part or maybe the entire story that you're telling us. And then on the other side, it made me sort of like scared, because if I'm not the only one who's going through it and they're not the only one who's going through it, then then what is the point of us even living, you know? Not that like you want to kill yourself or anything like that, but what is the point of us, where's the freedom in living, you know? When you come into, when you're born, they tell you, oh, you can live as you want to, you know, we have rights, the democratic country. But then when you go out, you can be raped, killed, murdered. You can't walk around town in a certain attire. You have to think and you have to scrutinize each and every outfit you wear. And all those things. So it also made me very fearful and very scared. I actually had almost had like some tension after producing and listening to that episode over and over again. So my friend and I went to a mall on this past Saturday and were buying a gift from one of my other friends, right? And when we got into the mall, we wanted a specific product. And this product, there was only one of those kind left. And we wanted to go and compare the price of that very same product in other shops before we concluded on buying that specific product. So one of the shop assistants, he was a male, and he asked us, If we asked him to keep the product for us, and he said, no, you know what? If you really want me to keep this product for you, I can keep it for you and that's fine. But then what you'd have to do for me is to give me your cell phone number and your name so that in case you don't come back like later on and maybe another client wants it or another customer wants it, I can give it away. I can just quickly call you guys and ask you if you still want it. If you don't, then I can sell it to the other customer. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense, you know, because I can't keep, you know, the product behind the counter when it is the only one that's left. So my friend hesitated to give a phone number and her name. And I'm like, you know what? I'll just give my phone number and my name. It's fine. We want this product anyway. And it's probably going to be the cheapest. So we walked out of the store, went to other shops, and the product was not cheaper in other stores. So we came back, we bought the product, and then we left. This was around maybe 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Around 10 p.m. at night, I get a message on my WhatsApp. It says, hi, Ntombi, how are you? I say, okay, hi. I don't know who is texting me. I do not know this number, so I'm not really sure what is happening here. And then I say, so who are you? I don't know you. You don't even tell me your name. Just telling me hi in the middle of the night. And then he says, no, my name is this from this store that you were at in the afternoon. So I asked him, who gave you my phone number? Because I gave it to you for business purposes. I gave you this phone number as this store's employee so that you can call me if the product was not sold. And then when I came to buy the product, you were supposed to shred my phone number, shred my name, and not contact me at all. And that, I actually got very annoyed, because this is not the first time that this has happened to me, where guys from stores will, you have to sign maybe your signature, and then you also have to give your number after swiping or something like that. And then the guy goes and he takes your phone number for personal use. And so in that moment, I wanted to actually send him a message and tell him that, do you know that I can actually get you fired if I report this to your store manager? Because you are taking the number that I gave you strictly for business purposes for your own personal use. I do not know why you're doing that. And then a friend of mine just advised me against it. You know, he's like, no, please just leave it alone. Just block him and don't say anything further, because this could come back to you in a negative way. He could give your number out to people you don't even know, or he could start stalking you and things like that. And then I was, you know, I was in between, because I was so mad. On the one hand, I'm like, how can this guy be using my number for his personal use? And then on the other hand, I'm like, I have to also look out for my own safety and for my own and for my friends and my family's safety as well, because you never know what people can do with your phone number and your full name and surname. So that incident happened, and then eventually I just decided to block him from any calls, any texts, and block him also from WhatsApp.
So what is the earliest memory you have of being either catcalled or being smacked or grabbed out in the street?
Okay, so I was born in Zimbabwe. I don't know if I mentioned that at the beginning, but I was born in Zimbabwe. And when I started almost like growing up, if I can say, so, you know, a female starts developing secondary characteristics. So the breasts start coming out, the bums start coming out, the lips start to get fuller, you know, everything like that. I remember walking past the market, like with some of my cousins, some of my friends, and you know, the older men, not even older men, okay, in relation to the age that I was at then, it was definitely older men, so in their 20s, 23 year olds, 25 year olds, and they would you know, be like, hey baby, you know, type of thing, how are you doing, come over here, and things like that. So we would naturally ignore them and not say anything, and their immediate reaction was to swear at us. You know, after we ignore and we walk past, they'll start swearing at us and say, oh, you think you're better than, you think you're special, what do you have that other women on the street have, you know. So it's like, if I don't reply, then you insult me for not replying to your catcalling. You know, you are the one who's making me feel uncomfortable, and if I'm feeling uncomfortable and don't reply because I'm feeling uncomfortable, you start insulting me and calling me all kinds of names. And you know, this is not the first time that it has happened in Zimbabwe as well, even in South Africa. And then they start thinking that automatically men start to think that you are better than them, or you think you're better than, when you don't respond to them, to their catcalling, basically. I don't know if it's maybe that their egos have been hurt, or I don't know. Like, I really don't understand the logic behind it. But yeah, that's one of my earliest memories of this whole catcalling thing.
So that's like age 11, 12, or what?
I'm way younger than that. Let's say what about age 8. 8, age 8, 9, there.
Oh, wow. What is the age of consent in South Africa?
Oh, wow. I actually would not know. I think about 16. Yeah, 16. Okay. 16, 18 there. People can actually just fact check me because I'm not really sure. But 16, age 16, age 18. But then also, I think it's not even about just an age of consent. You know, sometimes you just need to look at the maturity of the person. And, you know, because you can say someone who's 16 is of an age of consent, but you know, they're being approached by a 45, 50 year old man. Does a 16 year old really know what the 45 year old's intentions are? So I think that also there's kind of a problem with inserting an age of consent to certain things, because that can just, you know, like there's a saying here in South Africa. So it's said in Zulu, in the Zulu language, and they say, grow up tree so that we can eat your peaches. And they say that to younger girls. So maybe they will see a 15-year-old on the street and say, grow up tree so that we can eat your peaches. So by the time they're 16 or 18, these older men are already expecting something from them. And when they turn the age of consent, they think that they can eat their peaches, if that's what they mean, type of thing.
Oh, wow. It is really early. I don't know. Do you think they know that this pedophilia, or do you think they just see you as like some, just a sex object?
I don't know. I really do not know what is going on in the heads of the men who do this. And I've been trying to have conversations with like guys my age, so around 18 to about 25, 27 there, just to kind of try and see what exactly is going on, because I feel like as women, we are having these conversations every day, just like you and me, just like what you did on your podcast, just like what I did on my podcast. And we're having these conversations, we're talking about our experiences, but it seems like there's a lack of response from the men who are our ages, you know? People just want the older men to respond, or maybe that one man responds and he says, oh no, gents, we must do better. And then all men start to retweet and post and reshare that specific post, but they don't actually have conversations about it. And I don't think that many of them realize that, you know, this is pedophilia. I think they just think, okay, I want to go and satisfy my needs, or I'm just trying to look for some fun. So it's not really important how she feels or things like that.
But yeah, I don't feel safe. Don't feel safe on the street. Don't feel safe at school. I'm starting to wonder if a safe space lives and it does exist outside the four walls of my bedroom, outside of the walls of my house, outside the walls of my yard. I don't know.
So when I was in first year, so I'm currently in my third year. When I was in first year, which was 2018, I lived in a building where it was
unisex. We call them hostels in Kenya. I don't know.
Okay, so okay. Unisex residences, basically, or hostels, a unisex hostel. And one of the guys in my friendship group, I won't really say, and I'm using the term friendship very loosely, about 10 to 15 friends or so, we were all in first year. And one of the guys was the only one who was known to be a virgin amongst all the guys, right? So, not that the guys made so much fun of him, but it was always like, you know how guys, especially the younger generation, people always act like being a virgin is such a terrible thing. So with him, it was sort of like unspoken bullying that was always going on around him. You know, all the guys would always be like, oh, but we've done this, but you've never experienced this. So that kind of thing always happened to him. So he had a girl that he brought over. I think it was just a friend. And this friend of his was in his room, and he came over to my room. And in my room, you know, people were just relaxing, were just talking, and nothing hectic was happening. We're just relaxing and talking. And then he brought, I think Fanta Pine Nut or Spoleta Pine Nut. It's like a yellow drink. I don't know if you know it. I don't know if it's there in Kenya, but I'm pretty sure it's there. But there's Spoleta Pine Nut. It's a yellowish drink, right? And he brought this other alcohol with it as well into the room. And he was convinced that if he could give her that drink spiked with a little bit of alcohol, she would agree to have sex with him, basically. So the guys who were in the room, so I actually wasn't paying attention to what was happening for the longest time, and then eventually I caught on to what was happening. About three other guys with him in the room, and they were helping him to pour just enough alcohol in the soda so that it would not be, you couldn't taste the alcohol taste, but more the soda taste, that she wouldn't know that it has alcohol in it. Hoping that if she drinks, she might get a little bit tipsy or a little bit drunk, and then he could have sex with her. I don't know if that would have been consensual sex, but I think they were trying to just, you know, relax her boundaries almost, just get her to calm down and relax and chill so that she wouldn't be thinking properly. And when I caught into this conversation, what was happening, I asked myself, well, and them, that how can you guys be putting alcohol in someone's drink without them knowing? If the girl really wanted to have sex with this guy, then she should just have the free will and the choice to be able to do it without alcohol being involved or without her drink being spiked. And it really surprised me because none of the guys actually thought about it that way. You know, they were all just thinking, oh, our friend is going to finally lose his virginity. Our friend is going to have a good time. So we must help him and you must do all these things. And, you know, you asked me earlier, like, do you think that people actually know? And I, from that experience that I saw, I think that they actually do not know.
So do you feel safe in school?
I for the most part, I actually feel safe at school. I have never experienced anything like that at school, like on campus grounds, that is. You know, you know that there's obviously danger, and some girls have had terrible experiences, but personally I feel safe on campus.
Okay. Do you have to think about what you're wearing before you go to class?
Oh yes. Sometimes, most of the times actually. Especially in summer. In winter you really don't have to think about it a lot. But in summer, you have to think, okay, is my dress too short? You know, are my breasts showing too much? You know, are my legs even showing too much? Because some people will come up to you and say, oh, nice legs, you know, but in a pedophilic way, in an uncomfortable way, if I can say. So I do have to think about what I'm wearing. Sometimes you just wake up and you say, listen, I feel like wearing the skirt. And if it looks sexy to you, then that's it. But I bought the skirt and I really like it, so I'm going to wear it. But most of the times you just have to be a little bit more careful.
Okay. What about outside school?
So the distance between my residence and my school is probably 8 to 10 minute walking distance. And if I'm outside of the campus gates, then I immediately start to feel unsafe because you know that anything can happen. Like your general catcalling, phone grabbing, girl grabbing. So they actually steal people. Like, yeah, they kidnap people. And it's so common because I stay in Johannesburg. So in Johannesburg is one of the most dangerous places, you know. So people get their phones stolen all the time. So sometimes what has been happening so far is that a car will pass by. So it'll be driving and there'll be another person behind you, right, walking. And you think, okay, I'm walking with this person. We're going in the same direction. And maybe you might not even have your phone out, or maybe you might have your phone out. But most of this happens when you have your phone out. And this person will just grab your phone, get into the car, and then the car will just speed off. Like, this is what's been happening a lot in Johannesburg. There also have been reports of girls getting stolen. And yeah, it's just a lot, actually. It's quite unsafe.
So we have this thing in Kenya. I don't know if you have it in South Africa. Sometimes you can just be stripped, like stripped naked in the city. I don't know if you call them town or in the city, in the CBD. Does that happen in South Africa?
I've never seen that happening in South Africa, but I've seen it happening in Zimbabwe, where maybe a woman could be walking, like maybe around the taxi area, like the public transport area, and she's wearing maybe a short dress, relatively short dress, and then like men will come and strip her off the dress or the skirt or the shorts, whatever she's wearing. And then they'll scream and shout at her and say, yeah, you wanted to show off your legs, so now you can show everything off, that type of thing. I've never really seen it happening in South Africa, but I've definitely seen that happening in Zimbabwe. I think the mentality is that if you are wearing something short that is almost showing your bums or your breasts or whatever, then why are you wearing it in the first place? You know, maybe you should have just walked out here naked. I don't know if it's about power. I don't know if the men enjoy it. I don't know if they enjoy embarrassing the women. I remember I recently saw a video. I don't know where this lady was, but it was of a lady who was in a pink dress. It really wasn't that short. I just think that it was figure hugging, so you could see like her whole figure. And one man, so she was walking through like the public transport place, and one man just came and almost like groped her bum, and all the men around, they were like, yeah, yeah. And she was very upset. You know, she was visibly upset. She wanted to hit someone. She turned around and she was screaming and shouting. And all the men were like, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, it seemed like they enjoyed it, you know, like they were just waiting for one person to be brave enough to go and grope her bum. And none of the men were like, no, guys, this is wrong. You know, all of them were just standing there and shouting and screaming as if it was something that was supposed to be done. I don't know for what reason.
And the person, I think, also saw that video. The person who, like, grabbed her, was it like a little boy?
Yeah, it was a very small person.
So where do they learn this? Like, do they see the older guys doing it and then they feel like it's okay?
I think so, because I think that everything that we do as human beings is from learning from other human beings. So I know that a table is a table because I was told a table is a table. And that person knows a table because another person told them it's a table. So everything that we do as human beings, we learn from other human beings, whether or not we are taught. So sometimes we can be taught, right? So you can be with your friends and then your friends are like, okay, this is how you should do things or whatever. But sometimes it's also because of just things we see on TV, things we see on the streets every day when someone is walking past, and then people see certain things and then they start adopting those behaviors as well.
So what does it do to you mentally when these things happen? Like when somebody grabs at you or catcalls you, what does it do to you?
Personally, I think it makes me feel like an object. You know those mannequins you have in the store, those dolls that just wear the clothes and pose the entire day, you know, because they are made of plastic, so they're not humans, they're not really going anywhere. So it makes me feel like one of those, you know, because it just makes me feel like an object that has no feelings, you know, because those mannequins in the stores, you can go to them and grab whatever you want to grab and they will not react, they will not feel anything. And I feel like that's what it makes me feel like I'm an object that's just waiting for someone to either catcall or grope or grab or do anything in that fashion or manner.
So have you ever had the courage to like talk to members of your circle, especially the male members of your circle, like your family, your friends, your classmates, about some of these issues?
So I spoke to one of my classmates about it, and he's also my friend. And I could tell that he understood like the severity of the situation, but also there were certain things that he also needed to learn and unlearn about how we feel as women. So I always tell him this because we have such productive conversations about these topics and stuff like that. And, you know, I get him to understand, but I always tell him that, yes, I am changing your mind, but then we need someone who is of your age and my age to speak up about these kinds of things on a more public platform, you know, because the conversation between me and you is going to change, yes, your behavior, but I don't know if you're going to go and tell your friends and also go and check your friends after this conversation, or is it just staying between the two of us and then, you know, you use it to your advantage, but then all your other friends are still, and the rest of the men in the world are still doing the same things.
Do you think he would tell his friends?
I think he would tell his friends if the opportunity arose, but like in a oh, friend, just come and sit down and let's talk about this. I don't think it would be that type of situation. I'm not sure, because you never know how people will react or behave.
Almost.
But Manuela ninaye. Poof, I must pretend just for my safety. Davuma genam, cause nan soyika.
They asked me to get back together with him and said I must just pretend for my safety. For my safety. And I agreed because I was scared.
So, like, if you were to tell men, like, the top 5 things to stop doing, what would you say?
The first point I would want men to know is that if you don't understand why a female is feeling how they feel about these incidences. So you see it on Twitter, you see it on all types of social media, and your female friends are talking about it, but you say, oh man, but how come you guys feel like this? You know, I don't know why you're feeling like this. Have a conversation with a female you trust. Sit down with her, a close female friend, even your mother, even your sister, and ask them why they feel the way they do. And open up your mind enough to realize that, yes, you have feelings, and yes, maybe you may be wanting to approach the girl that you are seeing, but is there another better way to do it? And ask them how they actually feel about the situation. I think it'll be better and easier to take in coming from someone who is close to them. So, you know, the regular woman on the street can say something, but you know, if the man is like, oh, this is not affecting my mom or my sister or my aunt or my niece, then they won't even understand what is going on. So the first thing is to just, if you don't understand, sit down with someone who's close to you and ask them how they really feel, so that you can get the female's perspective. The second thing I think is that men should try and start having these conversations, you know, in their small circles, especially the young men. To me, I emphasize that the young men especially are the ones who will change this thing that we're going through. They're the ones who will spot the change, and they're the ones who will maintain that change. So young men need to start having honest conversations. So if there's a group of 8 guys, for example, and one of them knows, okay, this is how my niece feels, or this is how my sister feels, he needs to actually go back to his friendship circle and say, listen guys, you know what, I think we must talk about this, and I think we must discuss this and try and find ways to change that are beyond just sharing things on social media, and actually just implement actual change, actual behavioral change. And then the third thing is to finally just stand up and say, this is not okay. You know, say, this is not okay. Say, yes, we've seen women talking about it. Women have started multiple organizations. Women have had multiple days of learning and unlearning, but now it needs to come from us as the men. So I am standing and saying, this is my organization, and this is how we're going to help change each other as men, so that we can help our women. One thing I think would be for just men to stop seeing women as objects. I think a lot of cultural and religious beliefs that we have, or doctrines that are there, sort of almost paint the woman almost as an object all the time. You know, the woman has no say, the man is the head. It's for men to stop seeing women as inferior or as objects. Because as I'm walking around, I can see that lots of men just think, okay, if I see a girl and I like her, I can just grab her and I can do whatever I want with her, because she's less than, she's inferior to me, and she's not as strong as me, and she's not, you know, as important as me. Men are the ones that are important. So I just think that men also just need to stop seeing women as objects, and stop a thing that always goes on in South Africa is that whenever these things happen, men tend to post, gents, we must do better for our women, you know? And it's like, you're saying our woman as if we belong to you, as if we're an object that was placed in your hands. And they said, you know what? These things belong to you, so you are us. You are our objects. So I think that my fifth point would be that we need to start having conversations and start going back and looking at, firstly, the social pillars, secondly, the cultural pillars, and thirdly, the religious pillars that we have as human beings. Because some of those things that we practice socially, culturally, and religiously are actually not even, I don't even want to say low key. I want to say high key promoting men behaving this way. Because some of things that, like, for example, culturally, you know, in South Africa, we have certain cultures that go that send their boys to initiation around the age, okay, I'm not really sure about the age, 15 to about 18, they go to initiation. So they enter initiation as a boy. When they leave, they become a man. That's what they say. And the way that some of the things that they taught, you know, and the way that they behave when they get back is like, you know, someone has told them that a woman is inferior. A woman is not supposed to speak. You're not supposed to answer to a woman. And women are your objects. Girls are there to entertain you. Girls are there for your pleasure. So I think we just need to start looking back on those things and seeing that, you know what, we actually need to change these ways of thinking and these patterns of thinking in our social, cultural, and religious beliefs.
Who is next? Am I next? God, where are you? God, can you hear us? God, can you hear us crying? Dear God, if you do, please answer, because Jesus, siyaphela Nkosi, one by one, siyaphela.
How is your 2020 going?
You know what? I'm just glad that it's almost over. Not that 2021 will be better. Well, I'm hoping it will be better, but like academically, it has been extremely tough. So now we're kind of wrapping up things. So I'm glad that that is happening and all the marks are coming out looking pretty fine. So it's been an emotionally taxing year. But at the same time, my family didn't really suffer because of the coronavirus. We really just, you know, were always blessed, I guess, throughout the whole pandemic.
So I usually at the end of the episode, I give my listeners recommendations, maybe a podcast, YouTube video, a book, something. Mm-hmm. You maybe have something to recommend. Yeah.
Okay. Actually, that's it. I have two books I can recommend.
Okay.
So the first one is called The Unspoken Feelings of a Gentleman 2. It is by an author called, I don't know how to pronounce his name, Pierre Gianti. That's a good book, like in terms of just understand, almost like having an open conversation about what really goes on in the minds of men. So I only read his second book. I don't know about the first one, but I'm still trying to get to it. And then there's the book called How to Stop Feeling So Damn Depressed by Jonas A. Horwitz. It basically talks about the man and what is really going on in his head. And he basically makes the man's ego, and he calls the man's ego a beast. And he says that how to deal with the beast and stuff like that.
I'm personally looking forward to the time when we are not raped and murdered just for our gender. when our drinks are not spiked and we can relax and enjoy ourselves when we go out for dates or just to party. When we have agency and we can give our consent without being seen as cheap or loose. When we are not kidnapped, stripped, groped. When we can speak our minds. I'm looking forward to when men can care about issues that affect us just because we are human and not because the same issues affect their sisters, wives, mothers, etc. I'm looking forward to a time when we move beyond just having conversations to actual policies and actions. And guys, actual guys, men, dudes, boys, if you would like to talk about these issues, if you would like to learn, ask questions, or even defend where men have been misunderstood, please reach out to me. Let's talk. Let me know if the suggestions and solutions we are putting forward are wishful thinking and what we can do instead. My handle is at @cocobutterjunkie on IG and Facebook. You can also email me on cocobutterjunkie@gmail.com. I will also put these links in the show notes. So that's Ndombi, guys. So articulate for a 20-year-old. I don't remember being that aware and articulate at that age. Ndombi, thank you so much for sharing your story and podcast with us. Keep going, and I wish you all the best with school. Guys, you can catch the whole episode on season 2000. It's called Series 5.1. Life as a woman in South Africa. And of course, please listen to all the other episodes she has made. That's season 2000. I will link Ndombi's recommendations in the show notes, so make sure you check that out and let me know what you think of the books after you read them. So that's the episode, guys. Please reach out to me. As I said, my handle is at cocobutterjunkie. I'm mostly on IG, but you can also reach me on Facebook or via email. That's the episode, and have a lovely week. Bye.